kataksha kirana chanta naman moha dhyaye namaha ananta ananda krishnaya jagan mangala murtaye ahamasmi sada bhami kadachinna hamapriyaha brahmaiva hamatasiddham sachirananda lakshanam mayevo deti shivyomni jagat gandharva patanam atoham nakritam brahma sarvajnam sarvakaranam nasvata pratyabhijnanat niram shadvan nachanyatah nachashriya vinashamne vinashasyad anashriya nashosha posha vikleda chedas chinnapaso mama Satyairabhyanilagnyambaha Shastraikimuttakalpitaihi Abharupasya vishwasya Bhanam bhamsan nidervina Kadachinnavakalpeta Bhachahantena sarvagaha Nahi bhanat prate sattvam Narate bhanam chato chitaha Chit sambedho pinadhyasat rate tena hamadvayaha Nadeho nendriyan chaham na prano namano nadihi Mamata parirabdhatvat akridatvat idamdhyaha Sakshi sarvan vitapreyan ahannaham kadachana parinama paricheda paritapai rupaplavat sukte hamina drishyante dhuka dosha pravrityaha atastasyaiva samsaraha name samsartra sakshinaha suktas suktin na janati Na supte swapna jagarau jagrat swapna sushuptinam sakshatoham atadrishaha vijnana viratas suptihi tadjanma swapna jagarau tad sakshina katam mesyuhu nitya jnanasya te trayaha Shadvikara vatandeta nirvikaro hamanyata tadvikara anusandhanam sarvata navakalpate.
This is where we are. We're strict to 14. So we can just repeat after me.
Tena tena hirupena. Tena tena hirupena. Jayate liyate muhuhu Jayate liyate muhuhu Vikari vastutas yaisham Vikari vastutas yaisham Anusantatratakutaha Tena tena hirupena Tena tena hirupena Jayate liyate muhuhu Jayate liyate muhuhu Vikari vastutas yaisham Vikari vastutas yaisham Anusantatratakutaha Anusantatratakutaha
Okay. Tena tena. Sometimes when you take tena is an instrumental singular of tut. By that. When you repeat like that, tena, tena, it can mean different things. It can be by each consecutive, each one. By that, by that, by that, by that. Or it can also just show consecutive occurrence. So in either way it works. So tena, tena, by that. Now, by he just take that as indeclinable, as indeed, okay? Tena, tena, by that. Tena tena rupena. Here's another instrumental. So tena tena goes to rupena. by that form. So it means by every individual form or one form consecutively, as you'll see in a minute. Jayate is from Jinja. It has a natural passive sense in the fourth fourth Atmanapada, and it means is born or is produced. Liyate means in the passive. Gosh, what's the verbal root of liyate? Li? Anyway, I'll look it up. Liyate means is resolved. So, in other words, you know how the creation is born, is produced, is sustained, and then it resolves, it goes into unmanifest condition, or it is destroyed? That's liyate, and this is passive, okay? So Jinja has a passive sense in the fourth Atmanapada. Liyate is passive. Let me just look that up.
I should have done it before. I'm just used to the word.
I just realized that I don't remember what the dhatu is. Dhatu means the verbal root.
Carol, for jayate, you say it's part of Jinja?
Jinja.
Jinja.
Jinja. Oh, okay. The root is jun.
Okay.
In usage, jun becomes ja, and then takes the fourth, the yakara.
Oh, okay.
Just like gum becomes gutch mm-hmm. in usage, mm-hmm. thrish becomes push. Jun, it's just a...
Okay.
You just have to memorize that.
Okay,
some roots go through a modification in usage. They change from their form in an unusual way. Like the root gum to means to go, mm-hmm. but in usage it becomes gutch, like gutchati, and so that you have to memorize that. Jun means to be born or to be produced. In usage it becomes ja.
Okay.
It's Sanskrit. You don't have to worry about it. Just know jayate is the fourth Atmanapada that means...
It's luge. Luge. Luge.
Luge?
What's happening?
Nothing.
Never Where'd mind. You get that?
I don't know.
Luke means something.
Okay.
I don't know what luge means.
Okay.
Olympic snow.
Are you saying that, Penny, because of the liyate?
Yeah.
Is that an English word?
I have no idea.
Don't make it up, Penny.
I know. I'm making it up as I go.
Let me just get this. Yeah, li. The dhatu is li, long e. And in the dictionary it says like to melt, to resolve. There's other meanings, of course. To
so
be absorbed
find,
in.
What did you find out?
To vanish, to disappear.
Or to melt?
Or dissolve, to vanish, to disappear, to dissolve. But we're using it in a sense of jun, that which produces, and liyate, that which resolves. So when the creation goes into unmanifest condition or totally resolves, comes to an end, disappears. But now we're not talking about li in terms of the creation. We're talking about it in terms of any given form. So let Peter go. Any given form is born, it comes into being, and also it goes out of being, right? Any form. And so the liyate means the resolution or the dissolution of a given form. So it says, and it's putting it in the passive. We don't use this construction. We use passive in English, but not this type of passive for intransitive verbs. So it really means by that form, jayate, it is born, it is resolved. We don't say this in English. We say that each individual form or every form is born and resolves muhuhu again and again, right? So every moment a form is born and a form resolves. A form, every moment of change, muhuhu can mean at moment after moment after moment after moment, you know? So at every moment or every consecutive moment is also muhuhu from muhur, it's indeclinable. So the idea is each form consecutively, you can take by the tena, consecutively any given form is being born and resolves, being born and destroyed, moment to moment to moment.
Right now.
Yeah, every moment there's a... See, this is the idea. any given moment brings about a change. In fact, we can't, in this creation, which is bound by time, each moment, right, brings about some change of the prior moment. So any given thing that we experience is actually modifying. The form itself is coming into being and going out of being. Because, say you have, we'll use the clay pot. Say you have a pot, and the pot form, just the form, every moment is going through some little change. Some little minuscule change.
You mean like on molecule level?
Yeah, take it on molecule level, on any level. There's nothing still. In fact, a moment is indivisible. There's an infinite regress to even being able to find a moment, because time is infinitely divisible. The only way you can resolve that is to come to the timeless. And the timelessness doesn't exist in the creation. So even the idea of a moment is totally hypothetical. Do you see that? Because what you think, Swamiji would use the example of taking 500 rose, in puja you use these rose petals and you're offering the rose petals. If you were to put 500 rose petals side by side, stack them up one on top of the other, and then hold those rose petals in your fingers, which would be maybe this wide, if you held them tightly, and then you take a needle and push the needle through the rose petals. It would go through in just a second, in a moment, not even a second, just in a moment. But then if you were to undo rose petal by rose petal, you see that actually each rose petal was its own moment, right? And so that one moment is actually 500 moments. See what I mean? But there's no end to that. So there's an infinite regress. It's infinitely divisible. Time is infinitely divisible. So because of that, it's impossible to find a moment. But so the idea of moment is kind of hypothetical. But now what they're saying here is any form changes from moment to moment. And when a form changes, it no longer is. That form no longer is. It's replaced by the new form. The new form has whatever changes are there in that form. But there's a replacement of the one form by the next form, by the next form, by the next form. In the clay pot example, there's no replacement of the clay, of what actually is there, the substantive. What is actually has been there is the clay, which is going to be true of all names and forms. And so the clay is not subject to moment, in light of this particular example. But the forms are subject to time and change. The form, clay form itself, pot form itself, comes into being and goes out of being. And that's just on the grossest level. Like if I take a lump of clay and I make it into a pot, now we have what we recognize as a pot. And then I decide I want to make a plate out of it, and so I squash the clay and now make it into a plate. So if you just take this pot form, the pot form itself has what we have, has what we call prior non-existence. Clay doesn't have prior non-existence, right? But pot does, because there was a time, a moment ago, the moment before the creation of the pot, that there was no pot. There was clay, which is the reality of what is actually there, but there was no pot at all. And once I destroy the pot, there's posterior non-existence. And so the pot itself is subject to, on either side, non-existence, right? Everybody see that? And so then if we were to really analyze what's going on with that pot, take a microscope to it or something, you'll see that that pot form, just by the nature of creation, is continually having, minuscule changes moment to moment. Well, any change at all means the non-existence of the prior condition. It's not no longer there, because that form has actually changed, and now that form is something else. Clay is not something else, but the form is something else, right? And so if we ask any given form to recall its prior condition, it can't do that, because the prior condition no longer exists. The form cannot recall, the form itself cannot recall its prior condition, because the prior condition has no existence at all. The new form is what is there. So let me just go through this here, and this is what he's saying here. So let's look.
Why don't we seem to notice the world like that? I mean,
we're making you notice it like that. You don't have, most people don't think about it. If you're a mumukshu or a philosopher, that type of person, you'll start analyzing all of this kind of stuff. But if you're just a person in the world, you're probably not going to think about it. But now you're thinking about it because I'm bringing it up.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so let's look at this first line. I want to just explain a little grammar here. By that form, it is born, it is resolved. This is called in Sanskrit, bhave prayoga. What that means is when you're using the passive for an intransitive verb. You know, like if I say, this is just so that you have a little Sanskrit. If I use the sample sentence, the boy hits the ball with a bat. The verb there, hits, takes an object, right? The boy hits. What does the boy hit? He hits a ball. How does he hit the ball? With a bat, right? So that means that that's a transitive verb. The verb itself takes an object. Boy hits ball. I can put that into a passive construction that we, in English, use all the time. The ball is hit by the boy, right? Boy hits ball, ball is hit by boy. So that ball was hit by that boy. We can say that, and it's fine in English. But if we have a intransitive verb means that the verb itself is reflexive. It goes only back to the subject. Like, for instance, the sun shines. The sun is shining. So the verb there only goes back to the subject itself. It's not that the sun is shining a ball or the sun is shining an object. The sun is shining. The person cries. It's the person who is crying. It's not taking an object. That's called an intransitive verb. So say I take where the verb doesn't take an object. So now say I want to put that intransitive verb into passive. And I say the sun shines. In passive, it would be, it is shown by the sun. We don't say that in English, right? So we'd say, suryena prakashyate, by the sun, it is shined, it is shown. You see? We don't do that in English. But in Sanskrit, they do that. That's fine. It's called bhave prayoga. It's putting an intransitive verb, you know, into a passive condition. So that's what's being done here. If I say, I am born, right? Or say the child, say we say like this, the form is born, right? But I put that is born means that object is coming in, taking birth. That object is coming into being. That's intransitive. And so say I want to put that into the passive in Sanskrit, which is fine. That would mean it is born by the form. See what I mean? We don't say that in English. The form is born, we'll say. So intransitive verbs, we don't use a passive tense in English. But here in Sanskrit, we do. So janja, bhave prayoga. It's when we're putting into the passive an intransitive verb. Intransitive verb means that the verb doesn't take an object, it reflects back onto the subject. So the form is born, it is born by the form. So we use the third person singular. The form is destroyed. It is destroyed by the form, right? The form disappears. It is disappeared by the form. And so that's why this sentence can be a little difficult, because it says, by each and every form, tena tena, it is born and it is destroyed. It vanishes, muhuhu, again and again. Do you see what I mean? So if that's why you would have trouble understanding that or translating it in English, because we have to translate it. When we do a translation of this, we have to do it in the active voice. We can't do it in the passive voice because we don't have this construction. So we would say, instead of by each bhatena, tena, rupena, by every form, it is born and it is resolved again and again, we would say each and every form is born and resolves again and again. You understand? That being the case, vikari vastu. Vikari vastu means a vastu, the thing itself, the vastu, the thing that we're talking about, which is the vikari, that thing which is going through the modification. Vikara means a modification. Okay? Vikari, that which is has the modification. The vikari, and for Sanskrit students, that in affect shows possession. And vikari is in the neuter. So vikari, the vastu is neuter. So the vastu means whatever the thing is, the vastu. And here we're using vastu just in common parlance, means any given thing. In the end, and once we analyze it, what is it? The only thing that is there is Brahman. There is no other thing, because everything breaks in infinitely divisible, coming into existence, going out of existence. There's no real thing. But when we're just talking in terms of objects in the world, we are saying a vastu, anything in the world which itself is a vikari. That thing itself is going through a modification. So it's a vikari vastu. A vastu which is itself modifying. Like, for instance, the pot which is changed into a plate, which is changed into a cup. That's the vastu. The pot is the vastu. That's a vikari. The pot is subject to change. That vikari vastu becomes a plate, say. And that's now another vikari vastu, a thing which modifies. Then that plate becomes a cup or a tumbler. That's a vikari vastu. It's a thing which is subject to modification. Vikara means a modification. So
all,
here it says,
all objects fall in that category.
They do. So a thing, a vastu, which itself is the modifying object, for that, tasya, esham, tasya, esham, tasya is of that, esham, of these, of those, in the genitive plural, I think it's from etat, anusandhatrita, anusandhana, the word anusandhana, anusandhana, means the anusandhana is the recollection, or the recollection of that, or the analysis of that. It can mean either the analysis of something, the investigation into something, the recollection of something, the remembrance of something. So that's anusandha as the dhatu. Anusandhatra. Anusandhatra is the one, that's that tra from like kartra, bhoktra, that agent noun. Anusandhatra means the one who analyzes, the one who remembers, the rememberer, the analyzer, the investigator, you know, it shows agentship. The ta on top of that, so now you've got anusandhatra ta, the state of being the one who remembers. Remember ta or tvam shows the ness of something, the state of being. So that, this is in the, actually, ta is a feminine affix in the nominative singular here. So it says, anusandhatra ta, the state of being, the one who remembers, for that one, tasya, for that. The state of being for the one who is the rememberer, esham. Of those vikaris, the esham stands for the changing names and forms, okay? So we'd say, the state of being the one who is the rememberer of those modifications, tasya, for him, for the vikari. So take the first vikari vastu, the vikari vastu, the vikari, the thing which is a vikari, for that thing, tasya, the state of being a rememberer of those. Of those means of those modifications. Kutaha. How is that possible? How can it be? How can there be anusandhatrata, the state of being an investigator or one who remembers those modifications for the one who is modified?
What?
For that which modifies, how can that vikati, the vikati vastu, the thing that has actually modified, for that one, how can that one be one who remembers those modifications? How is that possible? So this is the idea, because we have as human beings, as conscious beings, we have what we call like that pratyabhijna. There's two terms. That pratyabhijna means I remember my prior condition.
Yeah.
See, like if I say, this morning I was sad. If I said it this morning, I feel fine now. I am fine now. But this morning I was sad. Right? I have a pratyabhijna. That means that I recall myself in this prior condition. I, who am here now and happy and fine, this I was 3 hours ago sad. Right? That's a pratyabhijna, where I recognize that the one who is now happy is the one who is sad. I could say, I am really healthy now, but yesterday I had a bad flu. So I, the one who is healthy now, is the one who was yesterday sick. I could say that's pratyabhijna, where I recognize the anuvritti, the continuation of my being through these states of experience. We even use this. There's I, who am awake now, had a dream last night. So I am the self. I was the one who had the dream, which is no longer present, right? I can even say, you know, in the dream, I had a dream last night, and in that dream, I was a young girl. So I, the one who am in the waking state now, in this condition, in this room, at this moment, I was, in my dream last night, a young girl, right? Or you don't even have to say that. The one who is here is the one who is present now to this world, is the same one who is present in the dream state. So now the question is, if I, the me, if I am actually the vikari, the thing which is modified, that thing no longer is.
Yeah.
So it's totally non-existent. It is not here.
Yeah.
And so how can I, if I was that, how is it possible for the me that is here to have a pratyabhijna, means that self-recollection of myself, who is in that state?
You couldn't.
It's not possible, because that state is no longer exists. And if I was that state, there can't be a pratyabhijna, because that state is gone. And so if the self belonged to that state of experience, I can't now say, and I am here now, to experience this. You see what I mean? So it's kind of like, if we go back to the clay pot, just to beat it in a little further, we go back to the clay pot. The clay pot is here. But when I change, when the clay pot is changed into a plate, if the knowership belongs, or the conscious being, if the self belongs to the pot, there can't be, the plate can't have a pratyabhijna of the pot. Because if the Atma, the self of the pot, belongs to the pot form, that self no longer exists, because it goes away with the destruction of the pot. If, however, the Atma belongs to the clay, then from the standpoint the vritti can say, because the clay is the self of the pot and the plate. And so say if you look at the pot as the mind that has a vritti saying, I am the pot, right? The mind, the pot form, which as a vritti says, I am the pot. Its sense of I is really the clay. That's what's actually there. But it can say, even out of ignorance, it can say, I am the pot. And then when the pot goes and is replaced by a plate form, now the plate can say, I am now, you know, a plate. Because the I belongs to the clay, not to the pot or the plate. If the I actually belongs to the pot or the plate, then when the pot is gone, the I is gone, because the pot and the plate are one and the same thing. It's gone. Now there's a plate, and now the plate says, I am a plate. Now, what were you before the plate? I don't know. I wasn't anything before the plate. I didn't exist before the plate. Right? And when the plate goes away, then I'll be gone, because the plate is gone. So there's no possibility of pratibhijna. So here it says in the first line, you know, each form is born and resolves again and again, right? That vikari vastu, right? That vastu means that object, that form, that thing is a vikari. It is what is modifying. The rupa, the form, is a vikari, means it is modifying, right? How can there be that kutaha? How can there be a recollection or investigation, right, of those vikaris, of those modifications by the one who is modified? It's not possible, because that which is modified no longer exists to investigate anything. And so, as we'll see in the next verse, what has to happen here in the whole teaching, in fact, is that you have to recognize the satya mitya. Satya mitya means the mitya, the rupa, the form, is totally dependent on its being for something that doesn't have prior and posterior non-existence.
Wow.
You see what I mean? We don't think like that, because the two are totally together. Like clay pot. Say, if you don't have any knowledge and there's a clay pot, I mean, the pot is clay. It's not that the pot is not clay, and the pot will feel, I am the clay. But because it is the clay. It's not wrong. It's just like you feel, as a jiva, you feel, I am the conscious being. Because you are the conscious being. It's the same as the pot saying, I'm the clay. It is the clay. Everybody see that? There's nothing else there but clay. For you, you say, I'm the conscious being. There's nothing else there but conscious being. But when you say, as a jiva, your body, mind, sense organs is me, as the conscious being, that is correct. But what you don't recognize, and this is where knowledge comes in, is that yourself, the conscious being, outlasts the rupa, the form. That it's asanga, that it's not attached to the form, that yourself doesn't go through any modification at all as the forms go on changing. The forms come and go, come and go, come and go, come and go, but their being is stable. The being is you. That's why you can have this pratibhijna. That's why you can say, this is my experience right now. But a moment ago, this was my experience. And last week, this was my experience. Because there is no vikara. There's no modification for the atma. If there was a modification, there's not going to be any anuvritti, any continuance of your sense of self. If you have any if you are the vikari, if you are the modification, there can't be that pratibhijna, that continuing recollection of your being. The one who is here is the one who is there. That's not possible, because the modifications have gone, right? And if the modifications owned the I comes and into being and goes out of being, just like the vikara does. The modification does. See that? That isn't your experience at all. Your experiences of your being, your self-experience is stable, and the conditions of which you are aware, right, go on changing, changing, changing. You don't. That's why you can always say, I did this, I did that, I did this. I experienced this, I experienced that, I experienced that. The Atma se remains the same. You get it?
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure?
It seems like we're talking about the self and the mind.
Yeah,
because it's the mind that has this recollection.
That's right. But, you know, and then the mind indwells the body and the sense organs,
right.
And because of that, the world is experienced.
Right.
But in terms of pratyabhijna, it is the mind that is making the comment.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can start with the mind, but everything, the conditions of the mind are the same, really, as the conditions of every object in the
right.
world. The mind itself is a vikari, the mind. It's the greatest vikari of all. It's continually, moment to moment, changing, modifying, in terms of emotion, in terms of perception, in terms of any type of experience. It's the mind which is in a continual state of modification. I remain as the constant, but the self isn't modifying.
Who recollects, then, this constant I?
The constant I is self-evident, okay? No, it's not... Its self-experience never changes because consciousness is consciousness. So that never comes and goes. But now, the mind has for its self consciousness. That's why the mind can say, I am a conscious being. Those are the words of the mind. The mind is the one who has words, right? So the mind says, I am the conscious being. When it says that, which is a true statement, it's just not complete, it is a true statement in the sense, like the clay pot, that the very being of the mind, the self of the mind, is consciousness. So now the mind says, I, the conscious being, am happy at this moment.
Okay? Yeah.
And then it remembers, it recollects itself, and I, the conscious being, was sad yesterday. Mm. Right? Now, why it can do that is because the consciousness which the mind has identified to be itself, right, is actually free of the mind. It is the self of the mind, but is also free of the mind. Yourself doesn't go through any type of modification at all. But the mind, because of self-ignorance, takes itself, the rupa, the name and form, whatever the vritti is, to be the conscious being. And even though it takes itself to be the conscious being, it doesn't see any confusion when it's saying, I, the conscious being, am happy, and yesterday, I, the conscious being, was sad. It takes itself to be happy and itself to be sad because there's like what we call an anyonya adhyasa, a mutual superimposition because of ignorance, where it has no viveka, it has no discrimination, the mind has no discrimination.
Yeah.
Between its changeless content and the coming and going of the vrittis. Between the changeless its changeless content of the self and the changing thought modifications of the vrittis. It doesn't have that discrimination. It just takes myself to be changing because it superimposed the nature of the vrittis, the nature of the thought modifications on the self and the nature of the self on the thought modifications. You see that?
So it's like it's very much like the mind were a mirror, and when it's reflecting the conscious mind, it takes itself to be the
I would say more like this, Deborah. You can look at the mind as a mirror in the sense that whenever the mind is there, there is no distance between it and consciousness. Right? It's just that the consciousness never changes.
Yeah.
You know? The little problem, all drishtantas, all illustrations have some limitations. Like, for instance, a lot of times we do liken the mind to a mirror and the self to the sun, for instance. That's to show you that the sun is illumining, like the water buckets, for instance, or the different reflections it's illumining. And so you would think there are many different suns because each vritti or whatever reflects it. You know, so we use these illustrations to make a point, but they all have limitations. Like for the sun and mirror, there's the sun up there and goes through space to illumine a mirror or a water bucket, which is down here. So we always have to use these drishtantas, these illustrations, to show a point, and then we have to take away the limitation of the drishtanta, right? So they're very valuable. We depend, and when you're teaching Vedanta and using it as a pramana, we depend on those illustrations, but you also have to work around the illustration because the illustrations exist within duality. Right? So they all have their all, you have to box them off, how they're relevant, how they're not relevant.
So what was the idea again on this verse?
The idea is that if you were, if yourself, the Atma, were the thing that goes through the modification, there would be no possibility of you being able to recollect the prior condition.
That's right.
Because it's gone.
Yeah.
And so if the conscious being is gone, because the conscious being is what modifies, if it's gone, it's no longer there to perform that act of recollection. So you have to, yeah, you have to understand this, why the satyam mitya is so important, where in any given thought modification, the truth, the substance of the thought modification means the satyam, the reality of it, just like clay pot, the reality of it is consciousness, which is changeless. The consciousness is my sense of self, the me. The me is changeless. The mind has me for its reality. Like the pot has the clay for its reality, the mind has me for its reality. I am itself. It's not away from me at all. That's why it's correct. When you say, I am my mind, you're correct. And the self that you're labeling as the mind is Brahman. There's no other Brahman. That is Brahman. You just don't know it. And so you have to be able to say, it's half truth, I am my mind. But you have to also, to have knowledge, you have to be also able to say, and I am free of my mind. My mind, just like the clay, totally depends upon me for its being. I am itself, and I am free of the pot. Right, so the pot says, I am the clay, and I, the clay, am free of the pot. I have to be able to say, I am my mind, and I'm totally free of my mind. I am my mind in the sense that the mind's self is me, and I am a sangha. It's I am a sangha. I don't change. When the vrittis change, when the thoughts change, when the experiences change, I am their changeless self. That's the satyam mitya. And if that's not the case, when one vritti is totally modified and changed into another vritti, there can't be any recollection, no pratyabhijna, because it's, the prior condition is gone. But in fact, the prior condition isn't gone. It means the prior condition of the vritti is gone, but the truth of it isn't. And so whatever the mind, as though reflects consciousness, the ahankara is in the mind, it will continue to say, you know, this vritti will say, I am this vritti. Next vritti will say, I am this vritti. Next vritti will say, I am this vritti. Because the I am, is the self is the truth of every thought. And if that weren't the case, then you would be new every moment. And then the problem with that is that you can't even find a moment, because change is infinitely divisible. The birth and death, the coming into being, going out of being, is infinitely divisible. And so, what would your experience be? It's hard to...
The conscious being doesn't recollect. I was wondering about that function of recollection.
See, what you have to understand is that the vritti, your mind, is the one who says, I did this yesterday, I did that, I did that. That's all a mental function, okay? And so that mental, the mind, that has all of these, it gains knowledge, it has remembrances, oh, that's the same painting I saw yesterday. That's not a pratyabhijna, that's just a recollection.
Yeah.
Yesterday I did such and such. The pratyabhijna is when I recognize that I, who am here now with this set of experiences, am the same self that was here yesterday. That's the mind recognizing that.
Yeah.
How can it recognize it, you know, if the one that it's recollecting, that pratyabhijna, belonged to the modification, and the modification is gone?
Yeah.
There can't be a recollection.
Yeah.
So that's the distinction that's being made here. Because it sounds like it's saying that pratibhijna is not possible.
It is not possible if the self, the I, belongs to the vikara.
Right.
It's not possible.
Okay.
Because it's gone. If it belongs to the modification is gone. And so then, because it's non-existent, you know, the self that's being recollected isn't there. And in fact, it's a new self that's here now because it's a new modification.
So it's a different dimension of recollection. It's not a normal memory. It's a memory of what's stable.
That's right. That's why we don't call it just a memory. We call it a pratibhijna. That means that the mind is recollecting its own self, its own presence.
Yeah.
And that presence is ongoing throughout all of your experiences, every experience. There's the pratibhijna of yourself being present to that prior condition. If the self belonged to that which is modifying, it's a new self every moment.
Yeah.
Okay. I keep wanting to introduce the word now as a word for the anuvritti and for the self, which we take now often to exist within time, but it doesn't exist in time. It, you know, time takes place in the now. And
we usually say, like the presence, that which is, or what is nityam? Nityam means that which is free of time. Mm-hmm. And so you are always in the now, but if you think that the now, what is now, can be found in the creation, that's a problem. The now means that there is nothing but now, in fact, but that now is a timeless now.
We tend to think of now as temporal. Like now,
that's right.
Is some place within time.
Like right now.
Right.
Yeah. But right now is a huge moment that can be infinitely divided into smaller moments. You can't find now within time. We use the word now, but if you were to analyze, to try to find what is ultimately the moment of now, you can't find that. Because the moment of now is continually divisible. But I actually am the timeless presence, which is the self of now, right? And so there is nothing but now, but that now is me.
Yeah.
That which is free of time.
Well, you just changed the definition of now, free of time.
Well, yeah, like if you were to analyze, I didn't really change the definition. I just showed the flaw in the thinking that we have an experience of now within time. In fact, the only experience we have is now, but that now is timeless. And if you say that, I am the timeless now, then even our memories take place in the present. And our projections of the future take place in the present. I can never get out of the present. So Swamiji will say like this, I am the presence of the present. Right? I am the presence that illumines as the very self of past, present, and future. Right? You never can have an experience of the past or the future.
The fact that time and space are just so interconnected, you know, change happens within time. Changelessness.
Yes, and change happens within duality. Without duality, there can't be any change.
Yeah. So they're like silence.
Yeah. Let's chant this and stop.
Tena tena hirupena, tena tena hirupena.
Oh, I'm doing another verse.
Tena tena hirupena, tena tena hirupena. Jayate liyate muhuhu, jayate liyate muhuhu. Vikari vastitas yarsham. Vikari vastitas yarisham anusandhatrita kutaha anusandhatrita kutaha tena tena hirupena jayate liyate muhuhu tena tena hirupena jayate liyate muhuhu Vikari vastu tasya isham anisantatrita kutaha. Vikari vastu tasya isham anisantatrita kutaha. Om Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.